Griffiths again. He's scored again!
Good play by Gemmell, and again. 3-1! James McFadden scores for Scotland! France are stunned, and Scotland lead in Paris!
Welcome to the Pure Football Podcast, unbiased, in-depth, and Scottish. I'm Owen Brown, and with me is Gavin Miller. Are you well, Gavin?
Yeah, I'm doing good. Thanks, mate. How are you?
Yeah, I'm very good. Thank you. To anybody that's listening, if you haven't subscribed yet, really appreciate it if you would. And also turn on notifications so that you're alerted as soon as we drop any new podcasts. In addition, if you enjoy what we do, please do let others know to check us out too. Tell a friend to give us a go or share the podcast on social media, especially somewhere like Facebook where maybe we don't have as much of a presence. Or leave a review on Apple Podcasts. It's all really helpful and we're grateful for it. So go on, drop the link in your WhatsApp group chats right now. It would make our day. We are going to kick today's podcast off with some analysis of St Johnstone versus Aberdeen. It was, of course, the first round of post-split top six fixtures in the Premiership. And this match intrigued us. A rookie manager in Callum Davidson, who's had a really good season, against a team about to have a new manager, also a bit of a rookie, Stephen Glass, joined them. After that, we're going to drop down a couple of flights to talk about Forfar Athletic versus East Fife, a match with importance at both ends of League One. And finally, one of our favourite things to do, get our grubby little fingers into the lower leagues and our tired and strained eyeballs onto some video of hot teenagers. Yes, we're doing a lone watch with a chat about some of the best loanees out there in Scottish football right now. First, though, Gavin, to Perth and St Johnstone versus Aberdeen. So, not a lot of action in the first half, really. In fact, Chris Kane missed the only big chance of the first half. Do you want to kind of talk us through that chance, Gavin? But also, I wanted to kind of get your thoughts on Callum Hendry, who's another kind of link between these clubs, unavailable for this game, of course, due to loan rules, and out of contract to the end of next season. So, yeah, yeah. What about Chris Kane's chance and what about Callum Hendry's future?
First of all, I just want to say that anyone who was dropping us in the WhatsApp group chat was very close to deleting the message there after that introduction to Lone Watch. But, yeah, the St Johnstone Aberdeen game, you're right, it definitely did intrigue us. There's a few sort of subplots in this game, Callum Hendry obviously being one of them. In terms of the opening opportunity, it's a cross in from Craig Conway, who I must give credit to against all the sort of bones in my body. He surpassed my expectations as a 35-year-old winger, and I felt right to just quickly call out that, you know, his XA is 0.21 per 90, which is a large percentage of which is his set pieces, and that's where this sort of chance came from. And I think his ability to create good chances for St Johnstone in a repeatable fashion probably highlights his importance to Callum Davidson and why he continues to trust Craig Conway in these sort of games. And I think, you know, his overall outputs are really positive. So I just thought I'd quickly maybe get our ageist agenda rolled out very quickly. But the chance itself, it's a whip delivery, and Chris Kane, he actually gets under the header and it sort of bounces off Lewis Ferguson and the ball breaks to Chris Kane and he's maybe about 5-6 yards out and he just sort of smashes it over the bar. I don't have the XG per hand to what this chance is, but I would imagine it's pretty high. And it interested me. I went to look at Chris Kane's sort of performance data and he has slightly underperformed his XG for the season, and you can see in the advanced data there's a few things that would suggest why. He's actually in the bottom sort of 25% for his shot accuracy for strikers, and again this sort of showed just sort of lashing at the chance, and it just interested me that, you know, we're seeing that his inability to properly convert his chances is coming back to sort of haunt St Johnstone in some sort of ways. And I think it's a really difficult situation when you think about being a St Johnstone centre forward, you probably have to really make sure that you take your chances that come to you. And to me, this would be a little bit of a concern that, you know, at the age of 26 now, I don't think Chris Kane's really going to improve or be able to change his technique in such a way that would suggest that this inability to place his shots correctly is going to change. And it sort of brings us on to Callum Hendry. And I think in the sort of limited minutes he's had for Aberdeen, he's done well. He's scored a couple of goals. But you're seeing the same sort of traits that you've seen for St Johnstone. He's someone that works really hard, pulls into sort of difficult areas for centre-backs to deal with, allowing for sort of runners to go beyond. And when I was thinking about it, Chris Kane's out of contract at the end of this season, and whilst he's had a fairly good season, would you want to, you know, continue to give all your minutes to Chris Kane? Yes, he works hard, and that's his sort of main strength, but so does Callum Hendry. It's not like he doesn't put effort in off the ball. So I'm just a bit surprised at how St Johnstone have managed this, if I'm being honest. If you think of, you know, Chris Kane being out of contract this summer, they've got Stevie May and Callum Hendry both contracted to 2022. They've got Guy Melamed as well, who's out of contract this summer. So I just find the full situation very strange at St Johnstone. Do you feel different on that one?
A very strange one. I mean, I think the whole kind of transfer of Callum Hendry is a bit perplexing. I guess Aberdeen were desperate for a striker, right? To the extent that they ended up with kind of three, Camberi and Hornby and Hendry. Maybe, you know, they were heavily incentivizing teams to part with those strikers, and it was just too good a deal for St Johnstone to turn down for somebody that they potentially weren't going to be starting. But yeah, similarly to you, I know he was frustrating, and I know that he didn't put away chances that St Johnstone fans would think he should have. Certainly, you know, was running very cold in terms of goals, but I think you and I both like him, and in terms of the alternatives, I'm just a bit surprised with that kind of approach. But anyway, I think it'll be a really interesting one to watch in the summer to see what happens. You know, can you go back to St Johnstone and be a squad player or a starter next season in the final year of your contract, having been put out on a weird sort of loan like this to one of your divisional rivals? It doesn't really seem as though it's going to fit there. But, you know, will St Johnstone let him leave? Would they, you know, not maybe, I mean, the point was maybe they were sending him out to Aberdeen with the hopes that he had a purple patch and they could get a fee for him this summer. I don't know if they can expect to get any money for him or anything like that. But yeah, it'll be one to keep an eye on, right? It'll be very interesting to see who St Johnstone end up with next season up front. One to come back to, I guess, towards the end of the season. But in terms of this match, moving forward in it, Aberdeen won the match, at their first victory away from home in the league in 9 matches, and in fact, their first away goal in 7 league games. In terms of our goal, how many individual St Johnstone players are we going to blame for the lapses in this goal? Just how many people can you pin it on total, Gavin? There's plenty for me, right?
I've got 4.5 as my total answer.
who's the half player? Is that Callum Hendry with a ghost boot from the bench or something?
maybe the half is a bit harsh, but I'll get through it. So first of all, I thought start with Jamie McCart is far too advanced on the left hand side. It's ridiculous how high up he is. It then creates a huge amount of space for Matty Kennedy to be able to run into. Craig Bryson with an absolutely atrocious attempt at a tackle. Liam Gordon is then wrong-footed. Really easily, Kennedy looks like he's going to show him outside and then goes inside, and Gordon just can't move his body quick enough. Sean Rooney for being done by pace by Johnny Hayes when Sean Rooney had a bit of a head start on him. Not much, but a little bit. And then the half goes to maybe Xander Clark, I felt, could have done a little bit better.
You've got to come out for that, surely, right? I'm not allowing it just to be a half at Xander Clark's feet. I agree with you entirely, Gavin, that there's loads of errors beyond that. You know, there's a huge big hole in midfield. The defensive line is all over the place. You know, people could have stepped up and played offside, squeezed the play. I'm with you on Rooney gets beat for pace. And not only the fact he gets beat for pace, I think even if you know you're going to get beat for pace in that situation, a guy like Rooney, use your body, put your body in the way so that Hayes can't run past you. You know, don't you know, foul him or anything like that. But if you just stand in the right area while running. But yeah, for me, I'm not accepting that Xander Clark only gets a half.
Yeah. Okay.
Half bit of blame there. You've got to be out and onto that by the edge of the box and clean that out for me. Anything else you want to say about that goal from the individual St Johnstone players' perspective that we're blaming?
I think that this is just the sort of goal that all season St Johnstone probably would have prided themselves on not conceding. I feel like it was really avoidable. I think predominantly you would associate structure and discipline with St Johnstone, and those were the things that were absolutely bereft for this goals. And I was really disappointed with, you know, all the aspects of it. I think, you know, none of these players are, you know, rookies. You know, you think of the experience of Craig Bryson, that the pathetic attempt of his tackle was just atrocious for someone that's, you know, supposed to be a ball-winning, holding type midfielder. Jamie McCart, just, I just don't get why he's that wide. I just don't understand. Liam Gordon selling himself. Yeah, all of it was just really bad from a St Johnstone point of view.
Yeah, not good at all. I was wondering maybe that midfield balance. So Murray Davidson, of course, was out. It was Bryson and McCann as the kind of midfield pair. But maybe, you know, McCann wanting to kind of be a bit too aggressive and press too high, and Bryson not really having the mobility and really actual kind of competitive ball-winning skills anymore to kind of compensate in that kind of space. But yeah, for me, you can't leave that big kind of gap. And if you're stretching that way, you've got to push up and try and play offside, and goalkeeper needs to step up. But anyway, yeah, not a good goal from a St Johnstone perspective. Let's look at it a little bit in terms of the Aberdeen side of things. So Paul Sheeran, in his final match as interim manager before Stephen Glass steps in, said at halftime, we tried to preach to the Aberdeen players to make more forward runs, and Johnny Hayes has got it spot on with the goal. And yeah, I think it's fair to say that Johnny Hayes did do really, really well for the goal. Can you give me any thoughts on him more generally regarding his time at Aberdeen, Gavin?
Yeah, absolutely. I think that for me, Hayes has been fine. His outputs are above average in a few of the sort of places you would want from a sort of wing-back type winger. There's, you know, he's above for his XA, his progressive runs, his pass accuracy, his dribbles, all these sort of things that you would want to see from a winger. Defensively, he's a little bit suspect. So I guess in short, he's okay, but I guess my thinking was more around about I just wonder if you could have got similar outputs in this system for a team that's, you know, one of the better ones in the Scottish Premiership. By giving minutes to a younger player, Aberdeen have sort of changed this. It looks like more of a 4-2-3-1 now, under Sheeran at least, whereas it was obviously sort of 3-4-2-1 under Derek McInnes, with Hayes playing as a wing back. But yeah, I just think you could have got similar outputs from maybe one of the younger players, or maybe you could have actually found out if Ronald Hernandez was actually a decent player by giving him some sort of minutes rather than just loaning him to Atlanta. I think it's very odd. You know, I think there was a lot of fanfare and about Hernandez's move and how it was really interesting. And to see him not get any sort of real minutes and all those minutes come to a 33-year-old who limited understanding, but I think he's costing Aberdeen around about $150,000 in salary per year. Just from what I've heard. So, you know, that's quite a big outlay for a 33-year-old. And I just wonder, you know, could that have been minutes given to someone else? Would you have kept with Hayes, or would you have looked for a different option?
Well, I think you make a fair point, Gavin, about, you know, he's been fine. He's been, you know, looking at the kind of stats and so on there. He's even been kind of above average. But I guess what you'd say is, you know, why couldn't Aberdeen have been set up in a position where they could have somebody who was younger, developing, and, you know, would be potentially way above average over a period of a number of years, you know? I guess the interesting thing for me to see is what happens next season under Glass, you know, so particularly with, you know, Scott Brown coming in. what sort of level of minutes is Glass going to give to Scott Brown? You know, the idea obviously is that he can help develop people like McCrory and Ferguson in midfield. But is he in fact going to end up eating up a chunk of their minutes or somebody else's? Similarly with Hayes, if he's still there, does that happen too? But yeah, I mean, just to go back to the reason I kind of asked the question about him at all, do want to give him credit for the goal. It was brilliantly done. I think he outpaced Rooney really well, had the kind of strength of mind to go for the opportunity there, you know, to make that run. And when he did get the chance in the box, he was very composed to take it and get the winning goal for Aberdeen. So well done to him. To kind of lean back to St Johnstone for a moment, and again to kind of remark on what the manager said, Callum Davidson said after the match that he was really pleased with the attitudes of the players. He said that they've made the top six, they've won the League Cup. Today they could have said, well, that's it, but their attitude was terrific. And in fact, Gavin, this was a first defeat for St Johnstone in seven games. And they did actually have some opportunities later in the game. So Sean Rooney hit the post with a header. Ali McCann had a close range chance saved by Joe Lewis. You want to describe those two chances for us and any thoughts on the remainder of the season for St Johnstone?
Yeah, absolutely. So the first chance is a ball played down the left and there's a pretty good overlap and run by, I think it's Callum Booth, who then sort of swings the ball into the box. Stevie May wins the flick on and the ball sort of breaks to Sean Rooney and he sort of powers in between, I think it's Lewis Ferguson and McKenzie, I think it was. And it's the sort of chance that Sean Rooney is really good at getting on the end of, these sort of back post runs from the right-hand side inside. And I think, you know, it's the sort of thing that's got Sean Rooney noticed, the sort of aerial presence and his ability to create chances, to get on the end of chances. It was a good run. It was in a dangerous area. He generated a lot of power. I think unlucky not to manage to actually get it to go, you know, on target. But yeah, I think it's a good chance for Rooney. And I guess the warning signs were there for Aberdeen that St Johnstone were starting to come back into the game. And then the sort of next chance for Ali McCann, it's I think it's David Wotherspoon crosses the ball in. Considine does a really poor job of clearing it for me. And the ball breaks at the edge of the area to Jason Kerr, who plays the ball to, I think it's Glenn Middleton, who tries a shot from a sort of difficult angle through a sort of crowded area, and it breaks to Ali McCann, who quickly gets the better of Lewis Ferguson, who for me, I don't know if this is just a little bit of conjecture based off of just this one game, but Lewis Ferguson seems to be a little bit suspect in his own box. I felt like for the chance with Chris Kane, he was didn't really react and the ball hit off him. And here again, slow to react. And Alan McCann's able to turn and get a shot away. It was a good chance and a pretty good save from Joe Lewis. So they were pretty good chances overall. And I think that, they were probably unlucky for one of them to hit the back of the net. In terms of St Johnstone, you know, for what's left, I think every game's now a bit of a free hit. I think these players will go into the games, certainly the ones that are not under contract, looking to prove that they should be around next season. And then the ones that are under contract are maybe trying to put themselves in the shop window. It's a fantastic achievement for St Johnstone to get, you know, the League Cup in the bag and obviously get top six. I don't really anticipate them to pick up a hole. Barrel of points in this sort of short spell against difficult opposition. Games will be tight. It'll be much like it's been throughout all the season. They'll be hard to beat, sort of one goal margins, but I think it's just a case of evaluating the players for Callum Davidson between now and the end of the season, evaluating who he wants to hand out those contract extensions to and assessing where you can potentially upgrade the team going into the 2022 season. Do you feel any different?
Yeah, I think that's a fair way of him potentially approaching the remainder of things. There's been a change in the kind of head of football operations role at St Johnstone, so I guess it's also about kind of getting to know the new person in that role and working with them and setting out the plans for the close season and the transfer window and so on. They have Clyde in the Scottish Cup fourth round on Saturday at home. And then they have Rangers in the league the following Wednesday. So a couple of pretty big games. I guess I'm most interested to see how they get on against Livingston and Hibernian, see if they can maybe close the gap on Livingston and pit them to fifth spot. But like you say, most interesting maybe from the perspective of, you know, how do they prepare for next season. In terms of Aberdeen, they've got four matches to play in the league and are 4 points behind Hibs. Those two play each other on the 12th of May. Hibs have got Livingston at home and St Johnstone at home before then. I was wondering, do you think that Aberdeen can catch Hibs? And also, what would represent a successful start to Stephen Glass's time as manager, in your view?
Yeah, I guess, first of all, I don't think Aberdeen will be able to catch Hibs. I think it'll be a really difficult transition coming in with so few games against the sort of the best opposition you'll face. So, you know, those difficult games against Rangers and Celtic. I think what would be good for Stephen Glass would be to, again, kind of similar to Callum Davidson, would be to really assess all the players that Aberdeen have. So it might feel like games are a little bit of a trial run whilst, you know, they won't want to publicly admit that. I do anticipate that. I think there's a number of players in this squad that, again, will be sort of trying to prove themselves, whether that's the loanees, whether that's the guys out of contract or the people that are under contract. I think everyone's coming in on a blank slate. I'm particularly interested to see if he makes the decision to try and give more minutes to some of the younger players. Obviously, his time at Atlanta 2 were predominantly coaching and playing with the younger players. So maybe someone like Ethan Ross gets a bit more minutes than he has since he came back from loan. I would certainly like to see that. Maybe Calvin Ramsey. I think it's just going to be a case of it's wait and see, but I think there will be it's effectively going to be evaluation of the players to understand what you need to address in the summer. And, you know, potentially, I was thinking maybe if you're Stephen Glass, you're really unlikely to be able to keep Flo Cambery or Fraser Hornby, but you maybe have an opportunity to keep Callum Hendry. So maybe you want to sort of give him some more minutes.
Build around him a bit.
Exactly. Because you don't really have another striking option unless you go, you know, to someone like Michael Ruth, who's not really played a whole lot, didn't do particularly well at Arbroath, I think he was on loan at. Well, whereas actually, sorry, on you go, mate.
Could also be interesting to see what happens with Bruce Anderson next season, you know, to see if that's another one out from the young players that Glass might want to reintegrate in some way, you know.
Yeah, I guess obviously he's still on loan at Hamilton, so but yeah, you would imagine he's going to be evaluating him. From what I know, I don't think there's been any contract discussions yet between Bruce Anderson and Aberdeen, so I think that if I was Stephen Glass, he would be someone I would want to renew, even just to have around my squad. I think you clearly need a categoric number nine, but right now you need two or three striking options, you know. So rather than have to have that amount of turnover and bring in that amount of new bodies, do you just renew Bruce Anderson as the sort of easier option, or do you make that decision like we're sort of talking about with Callum Hendry to see what he's got to give and see if you can make something stick with him going into the long term? Are you expecting anything different from Stephen Glass?
Those are the sort of things I would watch out for. I guess it'll be really interesting to see what the style of play is. That's the kind of initial thing I'm looking for. You know, tactically, personnel selection wise, what are the differences from McInnes here? You know, is there going to be a kind of seismic shift in the style, the way that they play? Will Aberdeen fans suddenly be wishing that the pandemic wasn't in the way of them actually going to Pittodrie to watch the games? Whereas, you know, with McInnes, they might be quite happy to be able to hide behind their sofa at home and just watch the screen through fingers. But yeah, we'll see, right? Exciting to see what develops there. Aberdeen hosts Livingston in the last 16 of the Scottish Cup on Saturday. And I think that should be Stephen Glass's first game in charge. last 16. Round of fourth round. Yeah. Right, okay. Yeah. Just trying to do my maths in my head there. And then they have their next league game is at home to Celtic on the 21st, which is a Wednesday. And given you mentioned the prospect of Glass playing more young players, let's give a quick plug now for an article by Craig Carter on Twitter on his Red Threads WordPress. Craig's handle is at CraigCarter26, and he had a blog out today all about the young players such as Ethan Ross, Jack McKenzie and Bruce Anderson that he thinks should be integrated under Stephen Glass, and it's a really good read. So please do check that out if you're an Aberdeen fan. But now let's go down to League One, and down all the way, in fact, to bottom place for Athletic in Station Park, which was the scene of their home match against East Fife on Saturday. This match started in lovely sunshine and blue skies, but by halftime the ground was snow covered. And I watched this match as part of our Pure Goals live show on Twitch, which happens on a Saturday afternoon at 3 p.m. We would love it if you would like to join us for the next one, be part of the community and enjoy a little kind of watch along together, and talk to us about the match you're watching. It's been a nice experience doing that during the pandemic where we can't actually be watching the matches together. It's a kind of, you know, way to do it without doing that. So yeah, do give that a shot. The opening stages of this match, Gavin, were dominated by two wide right Danny number sevens, as Danny Denham of East Fife and Daniel Scally of Forfar made some things happen. Denham was particularly involved, I felt. Can you talk me through any of the kind of incidents involving him, the bits of play?
Yeah, there's a nice clip where he receives the ball out on the touchline. He shows a bit of composure to come inside. He evades the pressure, keeps driving towards the sort of centre circle, helping with the build-up of play. Plays a sort of a five-yard pass across the sort of centre, and it comes back to him. And then I like the way he just turned his body and then noticed that there was the space right in front of him and played the sort of simple pass into the middle. And East Fife then sort of drive into it. And then I think it's, you know, it's another pass in, and then Kevin Smith, I think it is, gets a shot away on goal. It was showing a lot of just composure and quick thinking for me, and the ability to be able to make something happen. I think there was another chance as well where Denham sort of picks the ball up in the box and drills it across, and the ball hits the bar. I think it was from Ryan Wallace this time, and you could see that the pressure was on, and at this point it looked like everything that was good for East Fife was coming through Danny Denham at sort of some point. Obviously, you watched this live, so did you see more of that? Was he really involved in East Fife's build-up play?
Yeah, he really wanted to kind of make things happen. You know, he was particularly keen to get on the ball and just kind of show for it, but also try and isolate the kind of left-sided defenders 1v1 and take them on. And he had a really good header, Cristiano Ronaldo-esque, kind of really high towering jump and powerful downwards header that the Forfar goalkeeper, who we'll come back to a bit later, saved really, really well down at the corner. So, yeah, I was very impressed with Denham and also Daniel Scally for bits in the early stages of this match. But like you said, it kind of felt like East Fife were putting a squeeze on, and Ryan Wallace did get the opening goal for them after 25 minutes. What were your thoughts on the goal, Gavin?
Yeah, so the goal itself comes from Forfar not really being able to clear their lines. And it felt like when we covered them earlier in the season against Montrose, I think it was, in the 3-2 game, they really struggled with some of the basics in that game as well as in this one. And I think if I'm on the Forfar bench, I'm really frustrated that Ryan Wallace sort of wins a header, the ball sort of breaks back to him, he's then able to chest the ball down, drill a shot in low from sort of just outside the box, and it sort of it goes in the bottom corner. I felt like Cole, the fullback, really could have closed it down a lot quicker. I felt like there was about three or four chances to clear the ball properly before the ball even gets to Wallace. And yeah, just from a Forfar perspective, it's defensively very basic and defensively very disappointing.
Yeah, I'd agree with that entirely, Gavin. The game got a bit stretched and kind of difficult in a snowy second half. And Barford Athletic equalised after 53 minutes. Can you describe Jordan Allen's goal for us? And also, he had a very similar chance shortly afterwards, which hit the post. Any thoughts on that one too?
Yeah, this is a disaster for his Fife, this equaliser. It's a long ball from Cole, who sort of atones for his earlier issues in the Ryan Wallace goal. I think it's Stuart Murdoch who gets done for pace by Jordan Allen. And it's hard to tell from the camera angle, but I think it was Stuart Murdoch. Jordan Allen sort of runs through, and it felt like there was a real communication issue here between Brett Long and the centre-back, just not being able to clearly communicate with each other. So it looks like at one point Murdoch sort of slows down a little bit, maybe anticipating that Long's coming to, you know, sort of empty the ball out, and then that allows Jordan Allen that sort of half yard to get in front of him, and Long sort of just sort of tries to clear the ball. It hits off Jordan Allen and goes in. It's a disaster from an East Fife point of view. I think knowing Tony McMinn, the assistant, he'll be really frustrated with that goal. So yeah, I think from an East Fife point of view, it's disappointing. From Forfar, you've got a bit of an ascendancy now. You've got your equaliser, you're back into the game, and potentially you've just been shown a way where you can create chances against East Fife with really sort of direct passes and allowing Jordan Allen to use his pace, just running at the centre-backs. And that's exactly where the chance that you were speaking to comes from. You know, Jordan Allen's able to get onto a long ball. It's then a 1v1 situation. He sort of knocks the ball past it. I think, again, it's Stuart Murdoch. And he uses his pace and his power to get by him, sort of drills the ball in low from a difficult angle. And he's really unlucky to hit the post. I think, you know, there's a lot of question marks at Forfar just now, but Jordan Allen's probably one of the few positives that they've got. And I think he's unlucky not to have, you know, put Forfar ahead in this instance. It was a really nice bit of play. And I think the only thing I would have been frustrated at, I didn't obviously see the full 90 like yourself, but it felt like after they were able to create those sort of chances, they really struggled to continue to do so after this. This felt like a real good chance they had in the game.
And indeed, they were hit with a bit of a sucker punch just a few moments after Allen hit the post. As East Fife went back into the lead from a sort of crossed free kick. Can you put your set piece analysis hat on and break this one down for us, particularly if there's any lessons either team could take into further matches about this goal?
Yeah, so it's quite a unique, difficult type delivery from Ryan Wallace. It's sort of chest height. It's not really head height. Played into the, I guess it's the cliche, but the corridor of uncertainty sort of whipped in there. It's hard to see everyone's starting positions from the highlights, and maybe one that I'll be able to go back to. But for me, there was a couple of things from a Forfar perspective that I would potentially look to do. So I want my defensive line to be higher up. I want them to actually be in defensive line. It looks like they're sort of scattered all over the place. Doesn't look like there was any sort of uniformity around about what they were doing. So I want my defensive line to be, you know, 2 or 3 yards higher up. I want to have room for Mark McCallum to come out and actually claim the ball if it goes into that sort of dangerous area. When there's all the bodies in that area, it's really difficult for a goalkeeper to come out, just from the sense of they probably know they're going to get clattered if they don't have the space to actually come and win it. And I think that starts with having your defensive line pushed right up so that the keeper's got the ability to be commanding in the first place. It's disappointing, obviously, it's been able to get all the way through to the sort of back post and sort of tapped in. But I just felt from a Forfar point of view that you would be really disappointed with how that sort of happens and transpires.
I'd agree with all that, Gavin. This game ended with some more chances for East Fife. They were thwarted by a combination of the bar and the goalkeeper before Forfar's Bernard Call was sent off for a bit of a snow-assisted second booking. I wanted, though, to focus in on the goalkeeper, Mark McCallum. He's got 4 clean sheets for Forfar, despite them being bottom of the table. How did you feel he seemed to do throughout this match?
Yeah, so I felt like he was a really confident shot stopper. He made a number of good saves from sort of 15 to 20 yards. Made saves from Ryan Wallace in the first half and a couple that we spoke about there. And I think that he looks like he's good when it's about being, again, that sort of shot stopper from distance. He's able to get down low. But the thing that really stood out to me was I didn't really see him coming to claim crosses. I didn't really see him coming to, you know, assert sort of dominance or organising defence. I would say for me, when I'm at the bottom of the table, that's causing me some concerns. You want your goalkeeper to be clearly communicating with your sort of back line, making sure that your defence is set up properly, you know, making sure that you're allowing yourself to have these moments of aggressive nature from your line where you're coming to claim crosses or you're coming to, you know, off-put the opposition. I think you can win free kicks from, you know, the protection that's given to goalkeepers. And then that way you can positively influence your defenders that, you know, and have that faith that, you know, that he's got us and he's, you know, he's like, if it gets past us, he'll be fine. Whereas I think for me, I just didn't really see that from McCallum. I don't know if in the full 90 there was more of that on display, but certainly in the highlights. And I went back and watched the game against Montrose, which we covered, and I just felt like there was quite a lot of similarities in terms of he just doesn't have that commanding presence that I'm wanting from my number one.
That's a fair assessment. I think I thought he did really well in terms of the shot stopping throughout the match, and it just kind of stuck out to me that he seemed a good level in terms of shot stopper. It seems to have had a bit of an interesting career trajectory. So he was at Dundee United for a spell, quite a long spell when he was younger, multiple loans out, and then he went down to Plymouth Argyle, but I guess wasn't much use there, and then came up to Forfar and has been there for a while. And I did notice that Forfar appears to be his place of birth, so maybe that's why he's kind of settled back at Forfar Athletic. And you know, who knows, maybe he has a kind of second job that ties him to the area. Anyway, interesting. I was impressed, at least from a shot stopping perspective. I thought the save from Danny Denholm's header was outstanding, so just wanted to kind of flag that up. In terms of some general points around Forfar, this is their fourth game in 7 days. So they had a Scottish Cup game last Saturday, then played on a Tuesday, the Thursday and a Saturday in the league. They have a league match this Tuesday, and then they've got another Scottish Cup game this Friday against Dundee United, which I think is on TV, actually. So that's a hell of a lot of league games in a very short period of time. They have two further league games, Airdrie and Clyde, both teams that are in the bottom half at the moment with them before the split. And then they'll, of course, in the split, play four games against other bottom half teams. They are 5 points behind Dumbarton, who are in ninth. And the interim manager, Gary Irvine, who interestingly has been joined by Tony Docherty now, Derek McInnes's old assistant manager, to support him till the end of his time, I guess, probably till the end of the season. Anyway, Gary Irvine remarked after this match that the bottom line is that we have to start taking the chances we're creating. And Forfar Athletic have only scored 10 goals in 16 matches. My question to you, Gavin, is just simply, do they have any chance of staying up?
No, not for me. There's too many issues defensively. I look at the squad and I actually see quite a lot of interest in, you know, wide forwards. Daniel Scally, as we sort of spoke about, they've got Jordan Northcutt on loan from St Johnston. Scott Shepherd, who was at Edinburgh City. There's a few players that can, you know, create chances, and I just don't think they've got it in the defence. I didn't feel really enamoured by Cole at the back. I thought that he looked a bit of a liability. Didn't look particularly mobile. Didn't look particularly positionally aware. I already mentioned the sort of concerns about Mark McCallum, and yes, he's fine when you're, you know, getting shots from thrown at him, but it's the ones that, you know, I feel like he could have an influence on to help shore up that defence. And I think it's difficult, you know, to say, like, you know, they've conceded, I think only Clyde have conceded more But when you're not scoring and you're conceding a lot, it's difficult to find a way out of it. And maybe Tony Docherty coming in will help sort some of the defensive issues. If they do that, it's still a 5-point gap.
Yep,
it's a lot to turn around in such a limited sort of time frame. So, yeah, I am worried for Forfa, and I think that I'm sure you know Stuart Malcolm. I think a lot of people speak really highly about what he is as an individual, but he didn't do particularly well with East Kilbride, in my opinion, and I think that because of that, I would have been concerned to why he was going from East Kilbride jumping up two divisions. So that I guess there was warning signs for me. But yeah, I guess in a long way, I am worried for Forfa, and I think it'll be a difficult turnaround for them.
Sure, I'd agree with that. Talking about the other team in this game, East Fife, well, they went out the Scottish Cup to Green at Morton, although Chris Sampson of the Pure Championship podcast said that they were a little bit unfortunate to do so. But the point there is that they maybe don't quite have the fixture congestion now that some other teams do. They've got Peterhead and Airdrie to face in the league before the split. They've had a very mixed run of results with two wins, a draw and two losses in their last five league games. But they find themselves now in fifth place in the league on goal difference with the same points as Montrose and Partick Thistle in fourth and third above them. Are they a bit of a dark horse for promotion?
They could be. I love how close it is in League One. You know, Peterhead in seventh are only 4 points behind Partick in third. I think, you know, just a couple of games to go, and I think you could find, you know, if someone slumps at the wrong time or has a couple of difficult performances, you could easily find yourself missing out, and that includes Partick and Montrose. I like East Fife. I mentioned I speak to Tony McMinn quite a lot. I think Darren Young is a decent manager. I think they try and play in the right way where they can. And yeah, for me, I think they could be a dark horse. I think it's the sort of team, everyone knows what you're sort of getting with Montrose. Airdrie have sort of really fallen away big time. And Partick Thistle are Jekyll and Hyde. So it's just about being consistent. And obviously that's not easy. They've got Peterhead at home. I think that's a must win. If you're going for promotion and going for the playoffs, then yeah, I don't see why not. If you get into that sort of playoff sort of space, and you know you're pushing all the way, then I don't see why you wouldn't be able to. You know, if you go in and can get a couple of good results, you're playing the team that's finished second bottom in the championship, and whilst there's probably a bit of a jump in terms of quality, you're going in there with a different level of momentum in terms of, you know, where you are from a headspace point of view. So yeah, I think it'll be really interesting to see whoever finishes you know, top of the playoffs in League One. I think every one of them's got a good chance.
Yep. Well, you heard it here first then. Forfar Athletic to go down, and East Fife as potential championship team next season. The kind of final topic for today is loan players. So we have each picked out three players, I think, that are on loan at a Scottish club that we wanted to discuss. And we're going to go turn about. So who have you got for me, Gavin? Do you want to kind of start us off with a name?
Yeah, so I've got Jack Hamilton at Arbroath, who's on loan from Livingston. 20-year-old Jack Hamilton. He was at East Fife, where he was absolutely killing it before his loan got recalled to then loan him out to a higher level. Hamilton is someone who I'm actually surprised he's not been in and around the Livy team more. And I think some Livingston fans are the same. I think he fits the mould in terms of what Livy want from their centre forward. He works hard, presses off the ball, turns over the ball in terms of, you know, actually winning it back, and wins a lot of his aerial duels, competes for a lot of aerial duels. So that sort of off the ball mechanics that Livingston look for are all there. And in terms of his ability in the box, he doesn't take a huge amount of shots, but he takes his shots from really good locations. He's clinical. when it sort of breaks them. And I think for a team like Livingston, that to me would be something I would want, especially for a 20-year-old. Why would I not want him in and around the team rather than someone like J. Emmanuel Thomas? It seems a bit of a strange one to me. He's got a non-penalty XG of 0.39 per 90, which is incredible considering that our both struggle to create chances. So again, the reliance on your centre-forward to be clinical, and you're seeing exactly that from Jack Hamilton. All the underlying data and all the visuals suggest that he has the ability to continue to improve. And I think if I'm David Martindale, he's absolutely in my plans for next year.
Cool, good shout. I like that one a lot, Gavin. I've got Scott Banks. So Scott Banks was born in 2001. So he's 19 years old. He's on loan at Dunfermline Athletic at the moment from Crystal Palace. And prior to this loan move, he'd been playing in Premier League 2, which is under 23 football, and got 4 goals and 3 assists in 11 appearances, some of those involving some quite brilliant football. At Dunfermline Athletic, he's played in 10 matches, around 500 minutes of football so far in this spell this year. He's yet to score and has just 1 assist, and maybe that's kind of frustrated Dunfermline Athletic's fans. I've certainly not heard a lot of kind of positive press for him, but his underlying numbers are actually really quite promising. And in fact, he's quite comparable, statistically at least, to another 19-year-old loanee in the same division, Kai Kennedy. So I'm going to kind of run through a few details here. So Kennedy and Banks both attempt over 7 dribbles a game, and both have a success rate of about 55%. Banks' expected assists per 90 of 0.13 is above average for a player in his position in the division, and is not far off Kennedy's 0.17 expected assists per 90. Banks has an impressive non-penalty expected goals per 90 of 0.21, which is really pretty good for his age and role, in my view. He is yet to score, as I mentioned, but is attempting over 2 shots a match and has a cumulative expected goals of 1.20. So maybe a little bit unfortunate not to have had that goal so far. Both Banks and Kennedy make just under 3 progressive runs per 90. And whereas Kennedy maybe makes more passes to the box and through balls, Banks is a bit more active in a defensive sense, making about 4.5 possession adjusted interceptions per match, which is double that of Kennedy. And I saw good evidence of that aspect of Banks' game in Dunfermline's recent match versus Hearts, where he gave Adey White a very difficult time at left back, both by being a pacey threat inside and behind him, but also by aggressively closing him down and blocking off passes. A calf injury meant that Banks that he missed the game with Ayr United at the weekend, but he should hopefully be back for a couple of the Pars 4 remaining matches. And I wouldn't bet against him getting that goal. I think that young wingers get a tough time of it from fans at times, with maybe partly because of the expectations set by how wide forwards at elite clubs play now, where, you know, they're a huge source of goals. This can maybe get people written off as inconsistent or raw if they're maybe just a wee bit unfortunate. But I think that the stats and that kind of comparison there can maybe show that there is something there with Banks, and I really am encouraged by that and hope that the remainder of the season goes well for him. And I also hope that, you know, he gets a full season at a similar level next season. So yeah, that's the one for me, and I would encourage anybody, if he does play for Dunfermline again before the end of the season, try and get your eyes on him and watch him. He is an enjoyable player to watch, particularly when he gets on the ball. He's very proactive and wants to make things happen and skillful. Do you have another name for us, Gavin? Yeah. Somebody else that stood out to you?
Yeah, so I thought I would give a shout out to Dapo Mabudi. I know that we've spoke about him a few times on the podcast. Now 19, moved on loan to Queen of the South. He's out of contract this summer from Rangers. What I like about Mabudi is, so he's playing a sort of at times the centre forward role, at times a sort of left inside forward. And what I've seen from him is, the things that I was maybe questioning a little bit about him in terms of work rate. I spoke to someone who'd watched him quite a lot, and they mentioned that he can look disinterested out of possession. And looking at Mabudi's underlying numbers, he's competing for 6.13 defensive duels per 90, which puts him in the top percentile for advanced forwards in the championship. He's also competing for approximately 15.8 offensive duels, which is effectively pressing the ball. Both of these are obviously just attempts, but actually in terms of duels won, he's above average considerably for defensive duels and just below average for offensive duels. So to me, that was a really good sign that maybe Mabudi understands that he needs to prove himself right now at Queen of the South, and this is his window to get in a good move. I don't think he's a centre forward. I think I prefer him as the sort of inside forward with the ability to roam, which obviously not every system's going to be able to give him. But I think he's done a lot right. Carries the ball, I think it's 2.77 dribbles per 90, 1.78 progressive runs. And what that says is that he's able to actually help Queen of the South transition in the game and is able to help Queen of the South get forward and get into advanced areas. We know that he's got the pace, and obviously you've seen him at for the Scotland Under-19 zone. How do you think Mabudi would do as a, obviously with the caveat of not seeing all of his 90s at Queen of the South, but do you think he's someone that could do a job in the Scottish Premiership?
Not yet, no. I wouldn't say he's ready for Scottish Premiership for a team to be a starter at this point. I would want him to have another season, maybe at championship level. I really personally would have probably liked him to have started off at SPFL League One level for a loan, but you know, it appears that Rangers have this kind of relationship with Queen of the South, so it was kind of a destination that made sense. But I would have maybe started him a bit lower, somewhere that he maybe could have got, you know, goals and that kind of level of confidence. But that's not to say that I don't think that, you know, he can develop and get to that level, but just I'd be cautious for the moment. I agree with you that probably his more natural role was from wide areas and being able to attack the space and behind defences. It's not that he can't hold up the ball. He is actually pretty decent at holding it up and munking it, but I think that that's his main strength, you know, if he has the space to attack. The other kind of reason that I'm a little bit cautious, particularly with the kind of statistical things, and I do accept that that might point to some more pressing and defensive actions and so on, but I feel with Mabudi that quite a lot he loses control of the ball at times due to balance issues and that can maybe manufacture duels, as I guess what I'm getting to say there, like by potentially losing the ball, it creates another chance to win it, and that can maybe potentially inflate numbers in that way, where it's not necessarily a good sign. That's not to say that I'm definitely right on that. You know, by all means, it could be that these numbers are a good indication of going into duels and winning things. Just be a little bit cautious around that. But look, I really like the guy. From, you know, really interesting family with, you know, younger brother at Manchester City. I'm rooting for them to do brilliantly as a group and particularly as a player. I have enjoyed watching them for Scotland. There's a lot of talent there. I do think just needs to find a position and have a bit more time playing for the right team, the right system at the right level to really kick on. I don't think it would work out well if he was expected to play Scottish Premiership level football next season. I've got another player for us. We're going to step down another level to League One, and it is another Old Firm loanee. So this one's from Celtic. Ewan Otto has gone on loan from Celtic to Clyde. So he was born in 2002 and is just 18 years of age. He's already played 6 League One matches for Clyde so far, 5 of them full 90s, and also 90 minutes in the Scottish Cup. And he's only been there since, you know, kind of March, I guess. He's mainly played at left-back for Clyde, but he might also be able to play in defensive midfield or even central defence. He's played for Scotland Youth, but is also eligible for Ghana. And he recently signed a new contract with Celtic, tying him there to 2024. And I think Clyde fans have been really impressed by him throughout his time there so far. I think it's been, you know, maybe a bit of a surprise, maybe somebody that didn't have a lot of press you know, even when he was at Celtic before coming there. So a little bit of an unknown quantity, but he's done really well. He came to wider attention with a wonderful assist against Forfar Athletic last week. It involved him bamboozling and then darting between two defenders on the left, being really kind of proactive and skillful and direct, and then firing over a lovely low cutback cross for David Gubwelly to tap in. He's very much one I'm excited to watch more of and hopefully get a chance to watch some full matches. Keen to see how he develops. I think, you know, for a player like that, it's very, very unrealistic that you can break into the Celtic team. So, you know, having that contract for the next 3 years, I don't really expect, you know, to be watching him as a Celtic player unless, you know, things rapidly kick on for him. You would expect somebody that's going to be a starting left back for Celtic, you don't get let loaned out, right? You know, you're kind of just there in play. But hopefully he can find his level, profit from this game time at Clyde and being out in a kind of new environment and so on, and really kick on. Maybe another more interesting loan next season too, maybe at Championship level, for example. Have you seen any of him, or do you have another name that you want to skip on to there, Gavin?
I can't say I've seen anything of him yet, but he's a name that I've noted down to actually try and watch some minutes of. I've not seen a whole lot of Clyde this season. So yeah, I'll definitely try and keep an eye out for him. It'll be interesting to see if there is any sort of clear pathway. Obviously, there's about to be a change at the helm for Celtic, so it'll be interesting to see what the philosophy looks like.
The difficulty for Otto might be that there are a couple of our left-backs as well. So there's, of course, Leo Hedrelda, who's at Ross County, who's younger even than Otto, but, is probably, I guess, if you base it purely on the loan destinations, is ahead of him in the hierarchy. There's also Matthew Anderson, who is only turned 17 a couple of months ago, but is a left-back as well and is very highly rated. So it's a busy thing. You've still got kind of Greg Taylor, who'd be, you know, looking to establish himself as at least the number two next season. Yeah. So I just think it's a hard team to get into, full stop, for anybody, but it's probably a hard area of the pitch to get into at the moment, you know, with ball and goalie coming back, who knows what happens there, and you know, probably the possibility that we get to September the 2nd, they bring in another loan player that bumps you down. Anyway, let's move on. You got another name for us?
Yeah, it wouldn't be Pure Football Loan Watch without some Mockery Mania, right? So Chris Mockery from Montrose, on loan from Dundee United. It would be rude not to, is my feeling on this one. So Mockery is, I think we've seen it earlier, the impact he's having from Montrose. He scored some spectacular goals, and whilst they're not always repeatable, what is repeatable is his consistent level of positive thinking when he's on the ball. He always wants to make something happen. Mm-hmm. He's really effective carrying the ball forward. He doesn't have blistering pace, but what he does have is incredible technique. I think he does such a good job of keeping the ball close to him. Lots of ability to sort of quickly move the ball away from his opponent. He's an incredibly accurate passer across a wide range of passing. I think that he's someone that can... I guess I was kind of surprised that Dundee United didn't consider keeping him about, that they didn't feel there was any sort of way to give him minutes, which surprises me, considering that Dundee United's a team struggle to create a lot of chances and struggle to have a lot of people that can carry the ball or can, you know, do the sort of positive things in the middle of the park or in the wider areas. So, yeah, for me, I would have liked Mockery to have had a chance there, especially when you think that, you know, what was the point in giving minutes in a contract, even a loan contract to Mark McNulty over someone like Chris Mockery? To me, it didn't make a lot of sense. But obviously, you know, I can understand that maybe Dundee United were just trying to secure themselves for this year, but they're now in a position where they can't give any minutes to Mockery after they've secured himself because they've loaned him out. But yeah, he has a huge amount of touches per 90 as well, lots of passes, lots of pressures off the ball, turns the ball over, wins interceptions high up the park, and you know, does such a good job at just carrying the ball forward. And I would be very surprised if he's not in and around the Dundee United squads next year. Have you got anything to add on Mockery?
We all know how much a fan I am of him. I was kind of thinking about him when you were talking about how you can see him kind of think when he's on the ball. He's very much a kind of schemer, you know, not to get ahead of myself here and not to kind of put him on that level at all, but stylistically, maybe more like an Iniesta. Don't necessarily think of him as a wide attacking midfielder, although he could play in that role, but more of a kind of thinking, passing, movement kind of player. Looking for the space, vision. Might not put up heavy goals and assist numbers, but will be the pass before the pass that gets you the goal kite thing. In terms of playing this season for Dundee, beneficial that really would have been. He's incredibly young. You know, he only turned 18 a few days ago. So, you know, that would have been incredibly young to be starting play. Things don't quite click. Maybe the new manager has an expectation that he needs people in that position to deliver goals or assists. Doesn't maybe understand you as a player, so I think really this has worked out okay. I'm sure it's frustrating for Dundee United fans, maybe a little bit, you know, aggrieved at Mickey Mellon for the style of play and you know, things not being entirely enjoyable for them this season. But for Mockery's own development, it's better for him to have gone to a club, a system, a level that allows him to play every week and play well and stand out and you know, develop, than, you know, potentially to get some time starting in the Premiership for it to be very difficult and then maybe get bumped down to the bench and not really end up playing all that much. So, you know, I think that's fine. I wouldn't be disappointed if he got another loan next season again at a higher level. But we'll see. Whatever it is, I would just want it to be beneficial for him and however he kind of, wants things to happen.
Just before we move on, I was just going to say, can we say first that we've coined him the Tayside Iniesta?
No, absolutely. You know my feelings on these nicknames. Absolutely not. And we'll move straight on from that to my next and final player mention. So I've got Harry Stone. So he's another 2002 born 18-year-old, but this one is a Heart of Midlothian goalkeeper. Stone played one emergency loan game for Stirling Albion earlier this season, which was a 0-0 draw against Queen's Park, but he's now on loan at Albion Rovers. He's played 7 games for them and has pulled off some excellent saves. During our Pure Goals live show on Saturday there, Chris Marshall was watching Albion Rovers game and he remarked on a couple of saves by Stone, and I've been very impressed by him when I've watched him in games recently. He's already pretty tall. I think he's kind of 6'3" at 18, but he's agile, has good hands, also good with his feet. He's only had one clean sheet for Albion Rovers so far, but they're undefeated in his last 3 matches, and I think he's going to be key for them as they kind of aim to secure mid-table standing and see out the season well. He's one to kind of keep an eye on for the rest of this season and then beyond that. Is there anybody else that you want to mention at all in loans, or have we covered over the people that you want to talk about, Gavin?
I think there's loads of interest in loans and loads of players that we spoke about, you know, throughout the season, whether that's, you know, someone like Stephen Kelly at Ross County or Kyle Connell at Airdrie. You know, I think there's an array of young talent out there, and it'll just be interesting to see how they now cope when, I guess, we're getting to the sort of crunch period for a number of these clubs, how they handle the pressure of must-win games.
Absolutely. And just to kind of close out that topic, I wanted to mention Alan Temple, who is a sports reporter for the Courier paper, which I believe covers Dundee, Angus, Perthshire and Fife areas. He's really impressed me with his articles recently, and he's a good one out now on Kai Kennedy and Ben Williamson, both obviously on loan from Rangers at Raith Rovers and Arbroath respectively. It's well worth giving that article a read. And that really just kind of concludes things for today's episode. So I wanted to say thanks to everybody for listening as ever. And as I said earlier on, please do give us your support by sharing the podcast and encouraging others to listen as well. We don't have, you know, the sort of PR company or media conglomerate backing of some other podcast, and we're very much reliant on word of mouth. So we do appreciate it if you drop a review or tell a friend about the podcast, or even just share it on social media. But yeah, we'll kind of leave it there. Hope everybody's doing well, and take care. Gavin, anything you want to add before we go?
No, just echo everything you've said there, and hopefully you'll be able to join us for Pure Goals this Saturday for a Scottish Cup special.
Excellent. Look forward to that. Take care, everybody. Bye-bye.
Yeah. Heart just turned purple. 360 up front, it all comes full circle. Class photograph, Sandy had me on my Urkel. Patty Mahomes about to fall short a couple hundred. Sign, seal, delivered. I fucked a notary public. She witnessed me sign off on some undeniable numbers. Yeah. Make a set sell in Croatia to get the leverage. Groundskeepers cutting the grass and clipping the hedges. I took 2 mil out the cage down in the desert. Matthew Maddox calling the pit boss, double checking. The numbers all good, just pay me, I'm at the Rhino. Real life, the whole fam, goons like Rallo. One truck in front of me, one behind me to follow. Let me get a lemon pepper order, please. You gotta head a link before you order these. Docking jet skis in the Florida Keys. We all grateful for Weezy, but no one more than me. You just find a bottle with the messages. These days, fame is disconnected from excellence. Half the time, I gotta ask niggas what their profession is. Usher the generation, and these are where my professions live. I did brunch with the judge we appearing before. Private villas only, I don't go near a resort. We want everything galore, not just lyric galore. For real. And my city love me like DeMar DeRozan. I sent her the child support, she sent me the heart emoji. They all say they love me, but they hardly know me. Yeah. Dropped him off at school, big day for my little man. Recess hits, daddy probably made another M. School bell rings and I'm out there to get him again. Yeah. Teacher parent meetings, wives get googly eyed. Regardless of what their husbands do to provide. Asking if I know Beyonce and Nicki Minaj. Of course. Pull up to the front in a fleet of Suburbans. Flooded French immersion with the Secret Service. Shit is so obvious, it defeats the purpose. If this is your hobby, then come and meet your maker. Champagne, ring bells in the streets of Jamaica. Started at a crib, look how far this shit'll take you. Raw sitting on 235 acres. And that's facts. Hamdan Muhammad like my third cousin. Facts. Mansour Muhammad like my real brother. Facts. Dubai embraced me like an Emirati. Facts. All my Rolls Royces got a different body. Facts. Mansouri kitted out with every option. Facts. Let me know if that's a problem. If you got a problem with me, gotta walk around it. Used to say I had it before I got it. Now I got it all. And being honest, I don't really wanna talk about it. And if I didn't have it, wouldn't wanna talk about it.